The following is a rebroadcast of an interview conducted by Mike Malevsky of Elizabeth Ripley from the Mattsu Health Foundation. The original broadcast was part of the morning show on September 20th, 2013. Enjoy.
We're doing business under the name Mattsu Health Foundation, but if you live in the Mattsu borough and are 18 years of age or older and pay $5 annually, you can be a member of our great organization.
Okay. And I know, having been involved for some years in observing you over time, that there's been a considerable set of activities that the Health Foundation has been involved in over the years. And my sense is that you're a maturing organization. Is that correct?
I think that's a very fair statement. We've gone through some very interesting transitions over the years.
Okay. Well, one of the, in some respects, what I understand the foundation to do is to be intentional in collecting information and providing information about health issues here in the Valley. I know that you are also involved in funding activities that are important to improve health. But in order to do that, you have to know something about the state of the Valley's health. And you've recently been talking about a health study that was done. Did you want to talk a little bit about what that encompassed?
Sure, I'd be glad to do that. And just to sort of give a little bit of background for folks, our goal is to create the healthiest borough in the United States. And to do that, we need to understand how healthy Mattsu residents are. And then our goal is to make measurable improvements in the health of our community and our community members. And so to do that, we've focused the entire 5 years I've been at the foundation, we've tried to focus on understanding the data and then using the data wisely to make data-driven, science-based decisions. But at the same time, we also fundamentally believe that you also need to engage or work where the community wants to engage and work, kind of on a sociological level. So we've worked really hard over the last 5 years to improve the data sets that we're drawing from.
Okay.
And 2 years ago, we launched a full-scale community health needs assessment. And we had a lot of community partners in this work, partners ranging from Mattsu Regional Medical Center to Providence, to our local tribes and South Central Foundation, to our borough, the school district, our senior centers. So really quite a range of folks that participated in this planning process. And the first thing we did the first year in 2012 is we looked at the data, all the secondary data that was available on the health of Mattsu residents. And then we also looked at, we commissioned some primary data surveys, some household surveys that were telephoned to Mattsu residents across the borough. We also did a workplace survey, some key informant interviews, and we compiled all of that information and sifted through it collectively as a group, and we put together a presentation on the health of the Mattsu borough. And then we took that presentation in 2013 to 23 different stakeholder groups or regional parts of our borough, and we presented the data and in all of these forums. And we had the one of the things the participants got to do at these forums was rank the top 11 health issues. So they got to actually rank the top five. And so the community voted, what are the most important issues in Mattsu? And it was just a fantastic process, mm-hmm. Wonderful dialogue with the community. We just released the results last week.
Okay. Well, let me just break in here a moment to say this is KVRF Sutton and K208BC Palmer, and we're interviewing Elizabeth Ripley, and we're talking about health issues here. And in particular, determining how much we know about those issues. So this was this type of activity you've been talking about, a rather intensive, extensive study, would in other regions of Alaska be done by whom?
Well, that's a very good question, Mike. Sometimes, for instance, in Anchorage, they have health powers, and so the municipality would be perhaps driving this process. In a lot of communities, the public health department drives it. There's a public health process called MAP. I can't remember what it stands for, but some communities I know, like Homer, have used the MAP process. Our public health department was at the table, and one of our steering committee members, we chose not to use the MAP method, and we put together kind of our own route. The other unique thing about this process for both the Mattsu Health Foundation as well as other hospitals in the state, we are, as I said, the Original Valley Hospital Association, so we're actually a nonprofit hospital in the eyes of the IRS.
Okay.
And under the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, we're actually mandated to do this process every 3 years. The mandate doesn't explain how we do the process, so there's many different ways to do this, but nonprofit hospitals across the United States of America were obligated under, like I said, the Affordable Care Act to complete this process by the end of 2013.
Okay.
Depending on when their fiscal year ended. But for us, it was December 2013. We were doing this process anyway because for us, it's the right thing to do. So, but at the same time, we actually are mandated to comply with the law. So nonprofit hospitals across the country and across the state of Alaska have been sort of grappling with this. And like I said, there's many ways to do it. This is actually the fourth time in Mattsu over my career that I've been engaged in this process.
Okay. So now
Valley Hospital did this process, and
right,
we're still doing it.
So now to the details. You said there were some results that came out and have been shared. Talk a little bit about that.
Yes. So in these community meetings, as I mentioned, the community was able to rank the issues. And the number one issue ranked by the community was alcohol and substance abuse. And 83% of the time, alcohol and substance abuse was rated as either number one or number two. The medical community, the behavioral health community, the education community, the business community, and our youth all ranked alcohol and substance abuse as the number one issue. It was also ranked number one in Palmer and Wasilla. As I said, we did six regional community meetings, and our core area ranked alcohol and substance abuse as the number one issue. The following four issues, number two was, which was ranked 46% of the time, ranked as either number one or two, was child and youth abuse and violence, which is very interesting. And the following three after that all tied: access to mental health care, depression and suicide, domestic violence, and sexual assault. And so for us, these results were very compelling. Number one, all those top five issues are behavioral health issues, and they are interrelated.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, our approach to them at the national and state level is sort of siloed. We either address alcohol, or we address child abuse, or we address domestic violence. But really, they're very much intertwined. It was pretty compelling that the top five health issues in our community, as ranked by all these stakeholder groups and regions of our community, said that they was the behavioral health element. And, you know, what's really interesting about that is the foundation, as you mentioned, we make grants, but most of our grants have been on the physical health side of that realm.
Right, right.
And so what stands out about this for us was people were saying, you really need to pay attention to the mental health side of this equation, and which greatly impacts the physical health.
Right.
And very profound.
And I'd like to key on the interrelated aspect of all of these issues, because obviously in my experience, for example, having worked with ambulances over the years, I knew that very often responding on a call, there would be an alcohol involvement, especially in auto accidents. And we can look at that, but there are reasons why people use alcohol, and there are all kinds of other factors involved. And I like the sense of not trying to deal with just one aspect, but taking a look at how all these things interact together to produce a bad outcome very often.
Exactly. In fact, alcohol is actually the it's the medication for the problem.
Right. Okay. Yeah, and that's an interesting way to look at it, right?
Yeah, it's the medication for the problem. So if we can get to the root of some of those issues, then we can also, hopefully address the alcohol or substance abuse problem.
And of course, I want to mention, obviously, as part of the upcoming election on October 1st, there has been placed on the ballot what is referred to variously as a sin tax, an alcohol tax, et cetera. And without getting into advocacy for one position or the other on it, there's a separate issue, one that's bound in statistics and experience in the past, about the effect of alcohol taxes on the consumption of alcohol by different groups. What's your understanding of that?
Yes. An alcohol tax or sin tax, tobacco tax, alcohol tax, they're one of the most effective strategies for pretty significant and profound and almost immediate public health impact. When I look at to give people an idea of how significant they are, if there's very few things we can do in terms of programs or services that can move a major indicator in a year. This is one of those things. Any kind of alcohol, tobacco tax. They're talking about taxes on soda for the exact same reason. Very, very effective. Interesting to alcohol, most of the studies have not been on consumption. They've been on, with the exception of underage drinking. We have studies that demonstrate that. A tobacco tax, which raises the price, reduces consumption of underage drinkers. But at the adult level, what's been studied has been more closely related to alcohol mortality. So the first time Alaska instituted an alcohol tax, the mortality rate dropped 29%. I mean, that's the alcohol mortality rate. Most of those deaths are chronic alcoholics. That's pretty profound. The second time, it dropped 11%. Over time, that moderates because the price of alcohol with inflation and things like that, the price actually goes back down. There's been some studies that show we're paying the equivalent of what we would have paid in 1900 for alcohol. So that's our interest in the tax. There's very few things that you can do within a year and move an indicator, but a sin tax is one of those things. And that's why, Congress, and there's a lot of conversation nationally tied to the obesity epidemic of using sin taxes for the exact same reason. They're very effective.
Well, and I'm interested in your pointing to one statistic in particular that might be more helpful, because I know there have been some reports about the impact of alcohol tax in Anchorage, that if you looked at just one aspect of the result after a year, which involves the totality of consumption, you might not notice much of an impact. But if you dig a little more deeply, as I think you're suggesting, you'll find that there are noticeable effects, in this case on mortality.
Yes. I mean, that's the most prominent indicator, and that was studied nationally. But there's quite a number of other public health benefits, which we've cataloged in a white paper that's available on our website. It's pretty profound. I look at it as if you had a stool and the stool had four legs, and you had four main strategies to address this problem alcohol taxes would be one of them.
Okay.
It's that significant sort of in the lineup.
What are some of those other strategies that would also, just to complete the picture here?
Treatment is a very significant. It's not the most popular. But treatment is very effective, and we have evidence-based treatment out there that works. Another thing is changing social norms. So the example that I'll give is, you know, I exercise in the morning, and when I'm, you know, running around my neighborhood, there's people standing outside their houses smoking cigarettes.
Okay.
When I was a kid, that wouldn't have happened, but we changed the social norm that people recognize that even if they're smoking, they don't want their children or spouse exposed to that secondhand smoke.
Right.
That's a social norm that we've changed. That's been very, very effective. And so changing social norms related to alcohol across the state of Alaska. So an example might be looking at, making sure there's no alcohol at sporting events. We often tie alcohol to sporting events. Where do our local sporting events and clubs meet? Where do they, are they meeting at bars? Mm-hmm. I happen to know of some that are meeting at bars, and we've tied the sport, which is healthy, the healthy activity, to we've put it in the location of a bar where the children and youth they see the connection.
Right.
So those are examples of kind of social norms. We've made really good progress in our state. The rate of youth binge drinking has significantly dropped over the last 10 years. So we're making progress, and we want to continue to make progress. We know that if we can delay the onset of alcohol use while the child and adolescent brain is developing, the opportunities for a healthy life for that child or that adolescent drastically improve.
Okay.
Drastically. There's been a great deal of research really in the last 10 years on the adolescent brain development. And if we can, like I said, if we can delay the onset of alcohol use till after the age of 21, significantly reduces the chances of becoming an alcoholic or problem drinker.
Okay. So in a few minutes that we have left here, I'm curious about what's coming next for the Health Foundation. You've just recently completed this health study. You're working on making sure that people see the results of it. What initiatives do you see carrying on, say, beyond the election in support of alleviating the problems that have surfaced in the study?
So one of the things that our board of directors had hoped to do through this process for the Health Foundation was to choose some focus areas for our funding. So up to this point, most of our funding has been responsive. Whatever comes in, in terms of grant applications, we consider. I mean, we're certainly out there. We're working in the community. We're working with most of our health-related coalitions. We are out there sort of, beating the bushes and drumming up projects, but because we want to bring the best projects forward for our board to be able to consider for funding. But they really wanted to kind of change course a little bit and dedicate 75 to 80% of our funding to specific focus areas. So as a result of this project, our board selected two focus areas. They selected a behavioral health focus area with to be intentional of addressing the alcohol issue. And they also selected a focus area surrounding child trauma. We've learned a lot in the last decade about how significant those formative years are for a child. And when children are exposed to trauma, whether that be physical abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, and a host of other things, including alcoholism in the home, really sets up some significant and potentially detrimental. It can be incredibly detrimental to their health. So it's a root cause of some of those behavioral health issues. And so they've selected that as a focus area. They had already selected another focus area, which is healthy, independent seniors. So now we have three focus areas. With our new ones, our next step is to do an environmental scan of our behavioral health system in MATSU. One of the things we heard over and over in our community meetings was that people did not have access to mental health care, particularly youth and children. We heard over and over and over in our community meetings about this challenge of access for mental health care for children in particular. We need to learn more about that. You know, what children, what diagnosis, what age are we talking about? What reimbursement source? Because unfortunately, you know, who's paying for this drive many times, whether people have access to care or not. But these are kids that are in our school system, they're in our families, they're, you know, in our neighborhoods, and there was just a really community-wide recognition that, you know, we have a problem here with access and we have to improve it.
So right.
That's going to be a huge focus of our work going forward. We don't have the answer to that. We have lots of questions. And so our first step out of the gate is really to work with our behavioral health providers, to work with our hospital, to figure out, you know, who are we talking about? Not names, but who are we talking about in terms of who can't get care that really needs care and why, and then fixing the why. That's going to be our focus.
Okay. Well, that's very good. Elizabeth, you mentioned a website. What is that address for that website?
HealthyMatsu.org. Isn't that great? HealthyMatsu.org. Easy to remember. No hyphens.
Right.
But HealthyMatsu.org. And you know, building a healthy community really takes all of us. You know, it is about making healthy choices every day, but it's also about creating an environment that makes those healthy choices easy and recognizable. And so we all need to work on that. We're just grateful for all of our partners in this work. You, Mike, and Radio Free Palmer, giving us this opportunity to get this message out. You know, you're a partner because communications are a huge piece of this, and education is a huge piece of our work. The school district, the hospital, the senior centers, I mean, we're just, and the other funders, Rasmussen, Denali Commission, the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, United Way, we have great partners, our whole nonprofit sector. We're really grateful for all the partners in this work in building a healthy MATSU.
Okay. Well, thank you, Elizabeth Ripley, for calling in this morning and sharing some very interesting information. I learned some things. I thought I had read over the results of the report, but you were able to elaborate very nicely and succinctly. So have a good, healthy day.
Thank you. You too, Mike.
All right. Bye-bye.
Healthy day to everyone. All right.
Yep.
Bye-bye.